there. Welcome to In Full Color, a podcast on race, community, and justice. I'm Taylor McGee, your host, and today I'm catching up with a former classmate of mine, Kelsey Brown. She's a Black woman, reproductive justice advocate, and student at Vanderbilt University. She shares her newly discovered passion for roller skating and sheds light on the importance of intersectional reproductive justice. She also talks about why we need to center Blackness in feminist and activist circles. Hope you enjoy.
Thank you for doing this. I am very appreciative of it, and I'm excited to talk with you. So, if you could please tell me who you are, what you do, and how you racially and or ethnically identify.
Yeah, of course. My name is Kelsey Brown. I'm a student at Vanderbilt University up in Nashville studying sociology and political science. I'm a Black woman, and I guess I could call myself a reproductive justice activist. Right now, that's like the framework that drives like all of my actions and choices. So yeah.
Awesome. So how are you doing? I know there is a lot going on in the world, especially for BIPOC. And so how are you finding moments to rest and heal with everything that's happening with this huge wave of anti-racism?
Yeah, I think I've been handling things like pretty okay. I'm doing like all right as good as I can be considering everything, especially just like everything going in the world with like the pandemic and like the violence and death that I feel like has defined like so much of this year. And I feel like the one thing that I've struggled with the most is just like having moments where I feel like in control, and to feel like some peace and to feel grounded. And I think I found those moments, and I'm sure my family is so tired of me talking about it, but I found those moments in like picking up hobbies, especially like doing roller skating and doing things that like make me happy just because they make me happy and for like no other purpose. So yeah, I've been finding moments in peace and like rest and just like using my body and skating and like doing something that was like revolutionized by Black people. So I think that that's like how I've been practicing my own self-care for myself right now.
I think you touch on like a really important thing of roller skating is so, I mean, you phrased it really well, but it was revolutionized by Black people. And especially for myself, it's just been this time of going back to my roots and trying to, just trying to center myself on from my ancestors and just from other Black and biracial activists and just everyday people. So how did you get into roller skating?
So I picked up roller skating like right at the beginning of quarantine, just because I was looking for something to do because obviously there was just so much free time. And I'd wanted skates for a while, but I didn't really know if that was something that like people did outside of just like the rink, because I used to go to the rink when I was younger and I absolutely loved it. And I had inlines too. So after like checking with a lot of my family and friends to make sure it wasn't something like lame or they would make fun of me, I got some. And I got some like right before they like all, like the big wave of hype came in and they all sold out. So yeah, that's just, I just started randomly and I just love it. I have given a lot of time to it. But yeah.
Do you feel like the combination of the pandemic in conjunction with this surge of Black Lives Matter movement, do you feel like it's kind of not made you more aware of what's happening? Because I think when you are a minority, you don't have a choice not to be aware of what's happening. But have you found yourself leaning more into activist work more than usual, or has your perspective kind of changed or evolved during all of this?
I think this is like kind of work that I was already trying to do or always wanting to do, just like in the things that like the extracurricular activities that I always decided to pick up were always very much so like in activist circles. Like I work at the Women's Center back at Vanderbilt. So that's always stuff that I just tried to seek out. And I don't necessarily think that this wave has like sparked my activism. I think that like it just has continued to fuel it. But like these were conversations that I was seeking to have with people for like a very, very long time. And that like I was taking part in like purposefully. So I think like it just reaffirmed that these conversations are important, but I don't necessarily think that like it's started something new within me. I think it's kind of random, like 2 weeks or so before like this huge wave, like you're talking about, of like talking about like anti-racism and like having conversations with people, I like had like a pretty good interaction with like calling someone out that was like co-opting a white man, co-opting some anti-racist works and like not really giving enough credit, and also just like occupying a space that like wasn't his to occupy. And it was just like along the same lines of like the conversations that people are having now. And we had it like 2 weeks before then, and I was saying like seeing the like the same ideas I was saying like having with him, like reiterated in different spaces. So yeah, I think it's been very interesting to see, as like someone who already like was occupying like an activist space, to see everyone else like get, which is amazing, get like fueled up and everything. But like this work has been going on for so, so long. Like a lot of people are just late to the party, I feel like.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. It is definitely, I've occupied activist spaces and work for a very long time, and it's very strange because I feel like the only difference now is that it's more public. Yeah. And like you were saying, like people are just like late to the party, and I hate that there is so much like disclaimer right now of having to like, I know I follow a lot of like intersectional environmentalists, and they have to deal with a lot with people like stealing their work and reposting it and not giving them credit and all of this crazy stuff that's happening. And it has been a strange time because it's kind of like I've been preparing for this kind of cultural uproar, and it's finally happening, and I'm very grateful for it because it's much needed. But I'm also kind of like, what about what has been happening for 10, 15, 20, even 50 years, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've been speaking with like a lot of people, like asking a lot of my white friends, like, why is it just now like clicking for you? Like, why wasn't it clicking for you back when Trayvon Martin was killed? Or like there's so many other lives that have been lost. Like, why didn't it click for you then? Like, why is it just now? And like, I don't know what answer I'm expecting them to give me, but like, to me, no answer is ever enough. Because I'm like, you're so late to understanding it, and there was a cost to that.
Yeah.
And so I think there is just like a lot of frustration that I feel like a lot of people of color are feeling, where it's like, yes, we want to be like glad that this is happening, but this should have happened so, so, so long ago, you know?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something I was talking to one of my white friends, and I was kind of like, why did it take George Floyd's death for you to like wake up? And I think it's, I feel like being woke is now somewhat of a buzzword, because I think we all have a social responsibility to stand up for justice and to protect basic human rights. And so being woke isn't like something to aspire to be, it's something that you should already be doing and advocating for. And when I look back at Trayvon Martin's death, and you look back at Michael Brown's death, and compare the riots and the protesting in Ferguson to what was happening in Minneapolis and all over the US and even the world, I'm very grateful to have this like energy for people to like be demanding justice. But I've been through this movement for so many years, and I remember like when it first started, and I'm like, why did it take hundreds of thousands of Black people to be killed for finally, after like 10, 12 years, for people to kind of recognize, oh, there's something wrong with this?
Yeah. It's such a weird thing to like even think about, like, because I feel like for us, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
I think for me, the thing I struggle with is like when people say like, oh, I just didn't realize, or I just didn't know, it's like, how could you not? Like, it's so in your face. Like, sometimes you don't even have to like seek it out. It's literally right there.
Yeah.
It's, like, you can look around like the spaces that you occupy, the school that you go to, and you can see like that the representation, diversity, whatever the resources to the Black community are not there because they're not in your spaces. Like, how did you not see like that this is so deeply ingrained in our society and that you should take issue with it? Like, for me, I don't understand how people can't see it if they're like looking, say, around their classroom or among like their university campus and it's not diverse. And it's just like a sign that like the resources to people of color are obviously not there if they're not able to like reach the same spaces that you're in. So I just feel like it's, yeah, it's just like right in front of your face. If you're not noticing it, then to me, you're just like actively trying to ignore it.
Yeah, exactly. I keep getting frustrated of how, like, we keep a lot of these like anti-racism posts are about like issues that are far more systematic. And I think part of what systemic racism is that it's not always these like big ideological conversations. It's literally just like, oh, in your neighborhood, like how many other like people of color families are around you? And like, oh, like you were only in classes with white people, or like all these like different things. And even in college, being at a PWI has just been like wild. And I'm sure you can kind of attest to that too at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with activist work, and when did that start to become a part of your identity? And then also, what have your experiences been like as a Black woman in predominantly white spaces?
I can't remember exactly when I got into like activist work, but I feel like it was kind of inevitable. Just like in the places that I went to school, I was always the minority. And like, I just remember having conversations with people when someone tried to tell me that like reverse racism was real, and I was like, it's not. And then just like having to like go through and explain why it is not and why we should care about these issues, yada, yada, yada. I feel like that was like the first moment where I was like, okay, like this is like work that I want to do. Cause like I can't let that happen. Like, why do people not know that reverse racism is not a thing? But then I think just like volunteering, which I think is an integral part of activism. I always volunteered with the refugee community in Clarkston. And so I think like my experiences there just fueled me in another aspect of like, I want to advocate for this community. And then going to college, like I mentioned before, I started working at the Women's Center. And we do a lot of like community education things, but that also means that like we're advocating for a lot of issues. So I think that that's just also been a way of just like shaping like who I am and like the stances that I take and the person that I am on campus. People obviously like, they very much know me as like the Black feminist girl, because I'm always Women's Center, I'm always leading these events. So I think like that has just like continued to push me like in that way.
There is a certain commonality among activists or people who have a certain social justice mindedness ingrained in them of being drawn to communities that like need uplifting and being like completely external from like self-gain or like profiting off of someone else's like traumas and experiences. And so I think it's been interesting to see in my own life, like the evolution of like social justice issues that I've been really drawn to. And so what has your evolution been like of certain topics or issues that you were drawn to kind of lead up to what you're doing now with reproductive justice?
Yeah, I think it started, yeah, working in the refugee community and with immigrants. I think that that was like one of the very clear starting points for me of like a certain topic of like, I want to advance refugee rights. Like, I think they deserve to be here. We should allow their vulnerable population, like they need resources and help and protections. So I was very passionate about that for a few years. And I think that that like guided a lot of my academic choices. And like my freshman and sophomore year. And then like I still worked in the refugee community in Nashville. I tutored a family in English, and then I just worked at an after school program. And then I think it once I started working at the Women's Center, then I became very passionate about women's issues, obviously, including trans women and non-binary people. I became very passionate about those issues, like access to abortion, but also like how women and trans women and non-binary people and trans people experience homelessness and other issues, like all those intersections with feminism. And then I think as I became like more, I don't want to say like more firm in my Blackness, but like more, I guess, yeah, more like firm in my Black womanhood, I think it kind of transformed to like, I want to advocate for Black women, and I want to see Blackness centered in spaces. And then I think all those issues then put together, once I saw like the intersections between like the very close connections between issues in immigration, women's rights issues, and then anti-racist issues, I think then it kind of led me to reproductive justice, because to me, reproductive justice covers all of those issues.
Yeah.
And I guess I'll like go into a bit of what reproductive justice is. It was created by and coined by people of color. And reproductive justice is the human right to maintain your bodily autonomy, the human right to have children, the human right to not have children, and the human right to raise those children in safe and sustainable communities. And so for me, the human right to raise your children in safe and sustainable communities means that you're not going to be separated from your family, which is an immigration issue, which is a refugee issue. To be in a safe community means that you're able to leave a space that's unsafe, which is literally what getting refugee status is.
Yeah.
Your right to bodily autonomy means that you have the right to do with what you want with your body. That means you have the access to gender confirmation services. You have access to contraceptives. And I think that like brought into a lot of like my feminist ideals. And then reproductive justice is an anti-racist framework. So I think that for me, it's just like encapsulated everything that I believe in into like one framework. So I think that that's like how my journey of how like I led here.
That's so amazing. Wow. What has it been like for you to advocate for reproductive justice at Vanderbilt and in predominantly white spaces? Because I 100% agree that there needs to be more centering of Blackness in these kind of social movements. And so I would love to hear more about your experience as a Black woman doing this kind of work at Vanderbilt and other predominantly white spaces.
I think that that's like something that I have yet to navigate, like having the language of reproductive justice and like the knowledge that I have now is very different than like the spot that I was in like this time last year. I feel like not very many people know what like reproductive justice is, and I didn't even really know what it was until the first semester of my junior year. But navigating like the Women's Center at Vanderbilt, the space that I was in at least, is very white. And I did notice that like every single time that we were talking about reproductive rights, it was very much so just abortion, comprehensive sex education, and contraceptives, which obviously are incredibly important. But to me, it just felt like it was lacking. And I couldn't necessarily put my finger on exactly what was lacking. But I knew that like it wasn't everything that I wanted to advocate for. And so I think that like I was able to like readily identify the contradictions in like the pro-life movement in terms of how like they say they're pro-life, but then they don't advocate for like the Black Lives Matter movement, and they don't want to have social support for struggling families. I could see like those contradictions. But then I think it took some like learning and growth for me, and like some more exposure to things, to see the contradictions like in the reproductive rights movement in terms of like white feminism, mm-hmm. and how a lot of the reasons used to advance even Roe v. Wade and to support Roe v. Wade were very anti-Black, and that like people use like the idea of, oh, well, if Black people have access to abortions, then the crime rate will go down, as a reason to support Roe v. Wade. And so the reason that people were able to advocate for that is because the reproductive rights movement and a lot of feminist spaces are centering white women. And so I think that like navigating that space, I just always wanted to bring up the issue of race, but didn't have like the term reproductive justice, which centers people of color, to describe why I want that to happen or like what I want to advocate for instead. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So many of the successful like social movements in these cases and finally like getting rights for marginalized people is built on like white people did the initial work and they get all the credit for it, when at the end of the day, like we forget about like Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson and all the work they did to try and get adequate healthcare, and then bring in the AIDS crisis in the 80s. And even today, just so many like reproductive health clinics provide so many services for trans women and non-binary folks, and to try and not even try, really do a great job at providing affirmative care. And I hope that we get to a point in society where we don't have to rely on white people to do the speaking for issues that affect people of color and marginalized groups, that they can come to the table themselves and not have to fight to be heard, let alone having to, like, separate from having to fight for just protections for themselves, but fighting to not be silenced and to not be continually oppressed. And I think a lot of feminism, I feel like you were saying, it's very white dominated. And I couldn't, when you were talking, it reminded me a lot of like consciousness raising. And I feel like that has kind of come back into like the trend of activism right now. And it's very white. And there is a lack of bio POC included in these feminist dialogues. And so I commend you for, even though you don't have the language to name certain issues, the fact that you are still like out here centering Blackness and all these spaces is incredibly admirable, because it's so difficult. And I deal with that a lot too, of there oftentimes there's like not language for it, or there's not non-biased like resources to help you inform like your thought. And I think what you were also saying, of you didn't really know what reproductive justice was, I also didn't really know what it was until I started like really like following you more intensely and like listening to things you were talking about and things you were sharing. And I think it is a conscious and deliberate differentiation of saying reproductive justice, because it is rooted in people of color, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like, I mean, that's one of the things that I've been like so happy to do, is like let people know like what reproductive justice is, because like to me it applies to literally everything. And I think like it's a really good framework to use to like analyze situations and like what we should then do about it. And I think that like for a lot of women, it's maybe helpful for them to hear the term reproductive, to then connect like the issues of like the Black Lives Matter movement, which has to do with like a safe and stable community and being able to raise our children where they're like free of police violence, to like something that they can relate to, which is like placating like white feelings. But I still think it's like an effective way to help people like wrap their head around how everything is just so, so connected. And it all kind of is in like reproductive control and like population control, and its relation to like white supremacy. So I'm happy that you learned more about reproductive justice. Yeah. That makes me happy.
Yeah, for sure. It's been interesting. I think I've also had a reception from people on like a different front, because I think it's sometimes difficult for me, at least, being vocal about like one specific kind of issue, because in my head I can see all the intersections of it. I can see how all these questions of racial justice and equality and inclusion, all of these things are so like transversal and apply to so many different other areas of life, and reproductive justice is 100% a part of that. And I think it's been interesting to see how people who, like you and I, have been doing activist work for a really decent amount of time, that we, during this like time, I feel like a lot of us have fallen into our place in how best we can be heard and be received well. And it's just been like, it's been interesting to see, especially two people from high school, of like, I like playing a game of like, who's the closeted racist, and like figuring out like, oh, like all these little things you said, like, yeah, add, and now I can like see it unfold and how you're not responding to what is happening in the world. And it was also like funny to me, because I mean, like, you and I were like acquaintances and like friends in high school, but we weren't in like the same circles. And so yeah. It, like in college over time, like it's just been interesting to see how like how both of us have done like activist work, and that wasn't something really like discussed or like really known about. But I think, speaking from my own experience and what you've shared with me, that it's like always been present in our life, but now it's just kind of, we have the time and like mental energy to focus in on it.
Yeah, I don't know, I feel like, yeah, like you said, it's kind of like, it was always something that was there, but not necessarily like knowing exactly that that's like what I wanted to do. But like I said before, like, I feel like being a Black woman, it just feels like inevitable to not like in some way be like an activist. Like, I feel like I would be doing a disservice to myself and my family and people that I like deeply care about if I wasn't like pursuing something where I was going to be trying to advancing like our rights and ability to access things. Like, I just don't see how like my life couldn't inhibit something like even slightly related to that, because I think that like everyone has their own activism in their own ways and like the spaces that they're in, even if it doesn't necessarily say like activist. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. What has it been like with your sisters? Because I feel like all of y'all are very vocal and are very, I don't want to say strong-willed, because that like has a negative connotation, but I guess like you're all very vocal about these kind of issues. And so like, what has it been like for you and your sisters and your family to kind of be more engaged with this kind of work?
Yeah. We have conversations on race literally all the time in my family, which is like funny, kind of, just because it's not like we need to be having those conversations, because like we all pretty much agree on everything. Yeah. Just because we're Black. But I think that like what's been interesting with my sisters is that like we all have different understandings of like different aspects of things. So like my sister Kayla's in education, and she worked in higher education for a while. And so she has an understanding of like what race and racism looks like in those spaces. Madison's working in social work, and she's in social work school right now, getting her MSW at WashU, up in St. Louis. And so she has a very deep understanding of like what racism and anti-racist work looks like in that space. And then like, I'm more in like reproductive justice, like I've said, and like abortion access and like maternal mortality spaces and learning stuff about that. And so like I have a lot of information and like knowledge and experience of like how racism and anti-racist work looks like in that aspect of life. But like we can see the thread that's running through like all of those experiences. And I think like how our own personal activism has manifested in each of those spaces has been just like really cool of like seeing how like Kayla navigates it and how Madison navigates it. And like the advice I can get from both of them for like navigating the spaces that I'm entering into. So that's been like a really cool experience to have. And also just to have someone to like go and talk to and like not have to like worry. It's like a very like we can talk about these issues and you're not going to hurt my feelings and I'm not going to hurt your feelings, but like we're going to get to an understanding that's going to help both of us grow. And so I think that's like really cool.
I think a lot of people and white people in particular expect by POC to be doing the anti-racist work. And in doing that, it forces by POC to like relive their traumas and to have to be fully ingrained in their experiences on like an ideological and like philosophical level beyond just like how it's impacting them and their communities. And so how have you been like navigating and managing your own experiences and your own traumas while also doing reproductive justice work and anti-racism work?
Yeah, I think like I've had to be like really conscious and like cognizant of like when I need to step back, like for myself. I'll use like what's happening at Vanderbilt as an example. We're having like a very big wave of like Abolish Greek Life going on. And that is something that I have been saying for like years at this point. And I've always like critiqued like my friends and acquaintances participation in that system. And I would always like say to them my feelings on Greek life, which are very negative, that it's very racist, homophobic, sexist, misogynistic, everything. It's like a system that is based on like deliberate exclusion. And like, how could you, as someone who like says you're passionate about dismantling racist structures, be taking part in that one and giving your money to that? And I've been saying that to like specifically this one group of girls that were all in Greek life pretty much like since they joined and like since I like was more comfortable where I could say stuff like that around them. And pretty much every single time I was dismissed, or I was like, they used like the tool of like gaslighting of like, oh, is it really like, but all my friends, like all the excuses, which is just like, it's blatant dismissal. And it was like very frustrating for me. But like now with like the recent wave of like anti-racism and everything, people have been making, the same girls that I have been talking to are now understand like where I was coming from and like what I was saying are all like, yes, we need to get rid of Greek life. And like for me, as someone who's passionate about that, I could take part in actively trying to do that. But because of the emotional toll that's already taken on me to even get those ideas started in people's minds, like I've understood for myself that like that is something that like I'm gonna let the white people do. Like they can dismantle the structure that they upheld and kept. Yeah. I am happy that I made them realize that it was messed up and so racist. But I'm not going to actively participate in, like, I'm not going to put my energy into that because, like, my energy is sacred. So I think just, like, understanding, like, when I need to engage and when I don't. Like, if I need to lay in bed all day instead of calling out some white dude for doing something problematic, like, then I'll do that. Someone else can pick up that slack. But just, like, speaking over myself and, like, reaffirming for myself that, like, it is not my job to change white people's minds. Like everything that I'm doing is like rooted in the liberation of Black people. And like, I'm doing this for Black people. Like I'm not doing it for white people and so that they can grow and like, so that they can like feel better or whatever. Like that's not what I'm here for. Like that's not for me. So just like understanding, and like being in connection with like how I feel and like my energy levels has been like the way I've like navigated like what things I want to be putting my energy toward.
Part of why I wanted to sit down with you is because I feel like you really seem to embody like joy as resistance. And so for you, what does it mean to celebrate Black joy and use that as an act of resistance and an act of liberation?
Yeah, I think like I follow the words of Audre Lorde, where she says, caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it's self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare. And I think that is like how I've been framing for myself like moments of joy that I have. And I think like especially like in the very beginning, with the death of George Floyd, I felt really guilty for like laughing and for being silly and for like indulging myself and like doing things that make me happy. And like that's awful that I felt guilty for like having joy and like pouring into myself in that way when the world was like telling me that like when the world like was surrounded by so many like bad things. So I think that for me, I've had to embrace joyful things as a way to just like show like the racist structure that the United States is. Like, it wants to see Black struggle and Black pain. Like, that is literally what it is set up to do. Like, the police are killing Black people because that's what they were built to do. Like, that is what it was originated in slave catchers. Like, that is, it's doing what it's supposed to. And these people aren't held accountable because that it wasn't built for them to be held accountable. So I think, like, for me, when I hold on to my joy, that's, like, an active resistance to, like, the pain and struggle that these racist structures want to see. And so I feel like joy is something that I've always held with me, and it's something that I don't want taken away from me at any point. I won't let it be taken away from me. And I think that that's how, like, I'm resisting. Like, you can do all these things. You can shroud my community in pain and mourning, but you can't take away our joy. And I think, like, Black joy is so revolutionary to me. And, like, when I see it, it's so empowering. And I want to be that for other people, too.
That's incredible. What are some other people that you are immersing yourself in who are embodying the same kind of idea of Black joy and even more broadly, any kind of people, authors, creatives, activists, a whole array of people that are embodying the kind of spirit of activism that you are also embodying yourself?
I think like the main person, which isn't someone that people are gonna know, is my dad. He is literally like the kindest person that you will ever meet, but he's also the kind of person that like he wants to have conversations on race. Like, he wants to be advocating for Black people, like, and he seeks that out, but he always is doing it from a position of joy and kindness, and he doesn't let anything get him down. And so I think like that for me is like the example that I've always like held for myself of like, my dad is like this goofy guy, but he can get serious in like a second, and he knows how to like get down to like the root of issues. So I think like for me, that's like the example that I always point to is my dad. I'm trying to think of like people on social media that I follow. I can't remember any of their names because I'm terrible with names. But I think most often it's like friends that I have, just seeing like, literally my background is one of my friends, Jaden, him smiling, because I just love seeing Black boy joy. Trying to think. I can't think of any names. I'm awful with that. But with activists,
Audre Lorde earlier.
Yeah, I love her. Obviously, rest in peace. So yeah, if people like, for things and activists that people should read, I most definitely recommend Audre Lorde. Her piece, my poetry is not a luxury, is I love it so much.
Same.
Sister Outsider, absolutely amazing. Angela Davis, you can't talk about anti-racism without talking about Angela Davis. But she's
you
also
really can.
What?
You really can't, because
yeah,
she's
you just like, can't. You can't
yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
But she's also written some really cool pieces on like reproductive justice and birth control and like the history of reproductive control in the United States. So most definitely look her up. You have to. Dorothy Roberts, have you read Killing the Black Body?
I haven't, but I've heard of it.
Yeah. I'm not that far into it, but I've read like chapters of it here and there. It's absolutely amazing. I think she wrote it in the 90s. It also details a lot of like the history of reproductive control in the United States, from like forced sterilizations, forced abortions, like just talking about like population control and white supremacy. So I'm trying to think of who were the other names that I was thinking of. There was one more person. Oh, Miriam Kabe. I think I'm pronouncing her name wrong. But she talks a lot about reproductive justice and prison abolition. So those are all activists that I would highly recommend that you look at. And Loretta Ross. How could I forget Loretta Ross? Loretta Ross literally helped coin the term reproductive justice.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look her up and read her stuff. I would read The Color of Choice, which talks about white supremacy and reproductive justice and how it has just shaped people's destinies and who's allowed to have children, who's not allowed to have children. So those are all the people I think that I recommend.
My last question for you is, what would you tell young Kelsey or other young Black women? What advice would you give them to just stand firm in who they are?
Yeah. I would probably remind young Kelsey that she's smart, that she's kind, and that she is beautiful, and that there is like so much more to the world than like the little white classroom that she is in. And I would just like reaffirm for her that like brown skin is absolutely beautiful. It's to die for, and that you will grow into yourself very beautifully.
Amazing.
I think that's what I would say. And just that her feelings are valid. I feel like little kids don't hear that enough, that the things that you're feeling are absolutely valid and okay, and you'll see the other side.
Amazing. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it so much. Just like, thank you for doing the work that you're doing, because it is so very needed in the world and more people need to be doing it. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Of course. Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. You can learn more about the project at grayscalemovement.org, and that's gray with an A. And check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter while you're at it. Talk to you soon. Bye.